Here at Renew Energy Partners, climate change is very important to us, and so is beer. In every episode of the Green Beers podcast, we taste a beer together. We talk about the brewery and their sustainability practices. And then we talk about a topic relating to our work in decarbonizing buildings and mitigating climate change. Welcome to Green Beers. My name is Mike Savage, and I'm here with
Charlie Lauren,
Nathan Montgomery,
and Charlie Tryon.
Charlie, fantastic. We have two Charlies today. And how many beers do we have? I have the Holy Ghost by Anderson Valley Brewing Company, Charlie L.
Yep, I have the, and part of the pre-pod research we did 5 minutes ago is that turns out I believe all four of us have been saying this wrong. This is a little educational moment for those listeners out there who ever drink this particular style of beer. It's actually pronounced Goza. Like nose with an "a" at the end.
Still going to be ghost for me.
As long as it tastes the same.
Mike is rejecting that educational moment.
Goza. Did you get the beer, the same beer?
The Kimmy, the Yink, and the Holy Goza Ale. Is that how you say any of those words? I don't know.
I think so.
The Kimmy, so the Yank.
I could not.
The
find
only word
that
we
one.
Know. Oh, okay. So this is Anderson Valley Brewing, and the only thing we know is that we have the word Holy Goza and Ale correct.
There you go. Mine in particular is the Blood Orange Goza Ale. So
that's
the one that was
good.
In my vicinity, and at least fit the Goza profile, so I figured, you know, wine that as close as I was going to get. So here we go.
Yeah.
All right. I'm new to the beer tasting podcast. You guys just crack it. There's no ceremony for this. Just crack it open and pour it. Okay.
Yeah. I can however you might.
Oh, I even frosted a glass.
We like. I brought the glass. Somebody's got to sort of. We got to hear the beer can cracking open, but I think we just heard that in the background.
Oh yeah, I got a koozie today, so that's my method right now.
Now we'll start with the smell.
Ooh yeah, classic smell test, aroma test. Right on the can, we're looking at 4.2%, and right below that, solar powered brewery. You know that's going to hit a good score later on. I'll go with the Goza. I like Gozes. Are we sure it's Goza? I'm not even sure. I think you're just screwing with me, Charlie. You know, I don't say names all the time.
Goza. I like that. Goza. Let's do it.
That's like Goza.
A little like Porsche, a little Goza.
All right. There you go.
Exactly.
I was thinking Goza, like with just, but with the soft, like Goza. Right.
Like Goza.
Speaking well, as you know, a former language teacher.
The Goza could be the beer drinker's rosé.
Yeah.
It really could.
Flavor-wise.
It's fresh.
Yeah. It's
a good summer beer.
It's a little sour. It's definitely refreshing. So
what do you got
beer.
For a score, Mike? We scored at the end now.
There is enjoyment. There is enjoyment. Drinking this beer, I will say. We'll get to it later. Yeah. But it's, you know, a pleasant
I would say
and
the
positive
same.
Experience so far.
I would say the same. Yep.
Fantastic.
So it turns out a Goza is a warm fermented beer that originated in Goslar, Germany, with at least 50% malted wheat.
Huh.
So there you go.
Those Germans really, really figured out all sorts of types of beers.
Exactly.
the brewery Anderson Valley, they seem to be up there in terms of their sustainability metrics. Have you guys taken a look at what they've done recently?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I mean, actually, of all the ones we've covered, I think they may top the list. What do you think, Nathan?
I think so. I'm looking at more details here, but I know they're if not. They might already be there, but if not, they're at least on their way to be complete, energy independent with their own microgrid powered by solar. They have a water containment system to reuse water. They have a special nitrogen generator to reduce their CO2 usage by over 70% with what it previously was. And they are, their production cycle produces net zero solid waste, as well as good packaging. So really, I mean, you know, with, again, plenty of different beers reviewed on Green Beers over this new season and last season, and definitely Anderson Valley seems to be doing maybe more than anyone.
So, well, and I agreed. I mean, they have completely glass and plastic free systems, and so there is sustainable packaging as you can find in beer. And I think their water program is zero impact. They reuse 100% of their water back on their facility. It's pretty cool.
Impressive. I would imagine the nitrogen is for the carbonation, and it's to reduce, you know, carbonation where it gets carbonating with carbon, which is different. I will jump into questions for our one of our newest colleagues here at Renew Energy Partners, Charlie Tyron, or Tryon. Also, Charlie, let's get that out of the way. How do you say your last name?
Yeah, it's Tryon, but I, you know, Mike, with the Gose, if you want to do a little, put your own twist on it, I'm 100% open to that.
Yeah, you should not give me that option. You got to be very strict with
one of the
names.
One of the great things about being Mike Savage's colleague is that pronunciations are always an adventure.
Yeah, so I'm going to regret this. Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Noted.
It's really, you know, and it could change from day to day.
That's it.
It's just kind of
keeps you on your toes.
Yeah, what will it be? All right. Well, Charlie T, very simple. First question for you, or really question 1B. Speaking of, you know, a sour drink, are you lemon or lime? What's your favorite juice of the two?
You know, it's lemon, easily lemon.
Wow,
I don't really know why, but
just
it is
a gut. That's just a gut experience. That's just been true for, you know, since you were young.
I mean, lemonade. I think I was hypnotized early on that lemons were superior to limes. Even just, you know, despite how nicely a lime goes with a gin and tonic, or a, I guess, Corona beer, any beer really, but no, it's still lemon.
Yeah. Well, lemon. Okay. Well, on to the next one.
So, Charlie T, first beer. Do you remember?
Oh, yes. Yes, I do, actually. You know, you'll appreciate, I think you'll appreciate the story. It was a Pabst Blue Ribbon, and it was in Boston.
Nice.
Yes. I don't know why.
World headquarters.
But it was. Yeah. Yes. I went to a Red Sox game.
And had a PBR.
I had a PBR. I for the podcast, yeah, I think I was definitely 21 for sure.
You're the first one to actually claim that. Where were you living at the time, Charlie T?
I was in upstate New York, so I was living in Albany.
Yeah, cool. That's an epic first beer story right there, watching the Boston Red Sox.
PBR, you wouldn't expect it from my hometown, but yeah.
Mm. Right. Are you a Red Sox fan then?
I am. I actually am. Yeah. I have to listen. I'm the resident New York project engineer, so I don't wear the Red Sox gear around town, but I am a Sox fan. Although I haven't been to games in like years, actually. I think pre-COVID was the last time I went to a game.
Yeah, that reminds me that we have to do a Red Sox outing in the spring now that we have a growing team.
But will the Red
I'm
Sox
on board.
Be good? You know, that's the question. We keep, you know, not paying anybody's.
They have been good before, so we can hope.
The PBR will be good either way.
That's exactly right.
Exactly.
We can replicate Charlie T's first beer story, if nothing else.
So Charlie, moving from first beer, we got to go to the classic question of what's, say, a favorite beer. Doesn't have to be number one, but what's at least one of your favorite beers?
So I'm going to say, in general, I really like a Kolsch, which is kind of lighter. And this Goza reminds me a little bit of a good Kolsch, because it seems to have those like velvety small bubble carbonation, and that's what a Kolsch is kind of all about. So yeah, if I see one on the tap, that's what I'll go for.
Yeah. And it's got a little little lemony for you.
Oh,
too,
you know what? That's a good idea.
Yeah. There you go.
Well, you know what I like about that, Charlie T? It's a little counterintuitive. You know, there's a lot of momentum, although it's fading, for the IPAs of the world. Nice to have someone whose favorite beer runs counter to the trend.
That's right. Bucking the trend.
Exactly right. Marching to your own drummer there, Charlie.
Yeah, it makes it sound so much more righteous. Like it's purposeful. So I appreciate
that. You're taking a stand. Yeah, you're taking a stand.
Charlie, if you could have a beer with anybody in history, dead or alive, who would it be?
Oh boy, that's a good one.
Yeah, it's a tough one, right?
That's a tough one. Oh, okay, let's see. I feel like it's got to be a good enough answer where everybody says, okay, I get it.
Yeah. We don't judge you. Yeah.
You're like, you didn't waste a scenario on, you know, like you could learn something from somebody. But no, I think it might be. All right. Well, he's alive. I think it's Tiger Woods. But I'm a big golf guy.
I was going to say that, just to clue people in, Charlie T's a big golf guy. Yeah. I get that.
Yeah, you get a pass like that. I might have to use it on Mr. Woods.
I mean, it's definitely got some
what's
stories.
Something, yeah, absolutely. What would you ask? What's something you would ask him?
You know, I'd rely on the spur of the moment questions. I don't know. I think probably what it was. I'd have him walk me through like a Masters win. You know.
Yeah.
Something I could never experience. Let's see what the big cat was thinking.
I honestly think they're very, I don't know if there's ever been an athlete that was as dominant in their sport as he was for a while. And that's a pretty remarkable accomplishment. So
yeah, the stats are
how or why. Yeah.
I mean, in his prime, he was winning one out of four. I mean, it was just absolutely wild.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think they'll touch his. He has like the longest standing run at world number one. I don't think it's probably not possible to break it at this point. The talent pool is too wide, but it's incredible.
Yeah, definitely. So one last question, Charlie T. Here, what is it? What is it? Was there one experience or place, or class or one inspiration that brought you into our field of work here on sustainability and carbon emissions reduction, as you've experienced it?
Absolutely. Yeah, I had a revelation, I guess you'd call it. It was my first job out of high school. I decided I really wasn't ready for college, so I found a steady job, and it was in water and wastewater treatment for a facility, and maintenance, upkeep, pump maintenance, you know, all the day-to-day stuff that goes along with it. And as I learned more about what I was doing, I became much more interested in it, and I ended up getting licensed in wastewater treatment plant operation. And taking some coursework in that. And that kind of outlook on what you're doing here directly affects where you're contributing it to. So wastewater, it was super poignant that, hey, we're treating this, and it's discharged into you know, waterways. That's the process. And
right.
the treatment metrics are very important to everyone around you. So ever since I kind of filled that role, it sparked more of a push to have some sort of mission or outlook in sustainability in my career.
Wow. That's really interesting, because in some ways you're at a critical juncture in an ecosystem, a man-made ecosystem there, where you're both aware of what we're putting into water that needs to be treated, and then also aware of what the treatment process is discharging back into people's lives. So you're sort of at a pivot point in a water ecosystem. That's really interesting. Yeah.
So then that interest, maybe to pivot slightly now, that interest, right, in the purpose of your work in wastewater, how does that interest and purpose follow you to your work as our New York City-based project engineer for Renew? How do you keep and maintain that excitement? What's the best part about it for you?
Yeah, that carries over every day with the work that we're doing. So it's I'm fortunate that to find the work is out there, right? We have opportunities everywhere, and it's becoming more and more at the forefront of large organizations and business or real estate owners. So what we do on a day-to-day basis is mission purposed work. So the projects that I'm working on in New York, they all contribute to kind of a responsible growth and transition into a more sustainable future. So where I was previously in wastewater treatment, this is, how we're generating and utilizing electricity, for instance, or hot water on site for large buildings, and we're sourcing more responsible energy generation. And we're also localizing it, which in and of itself, I think, is a pretty unique hurdle, especially in a major city like New York.
I think New York City, it really is. And New York City is one of those cities that is leading the charge in terms of sustainability. And it's one of the reasons why we're excited to be, growing our team there, adding more resources and ideally doing a lot more projects. I think that's a great transition to talk about New York City and the opportunity that exists in what really is the most aggressive climate legislation passed in the United States in the past probably 100 years, which is Local Law 97. Charlie Lord, do you want to talk quickly about Local Law 97 and sort of the history behind that, and then we can progress into the conversation on sort of the future that 97 is creating here.
Absolutely. It's interesting because there is a dynamic of competitiveness between these cities. As I think we've mentioned on the podcast before, Boston followed New York very quickly with similar carbon ordinance. And there are now, I think, 11 or 12 cities that have similar ordinances. But I think the Local Law 97 in New York traces back to the original sustainability plan for New York that co-founder Doug Foy and chairman of our board was a principal architect of. He was the lead on putting together the energy efficiency standards for what was called Plan YC in about 2008-09. Plan YC set sort of carbon goals and a range of other sustainability goals. From that came a building performance ordinance around energy efficiency, benchmarking buildings against their peers. And then that evolved into Local Law 97, which is not just, and there were some light penalties for not doing your benchmarking. And then as the city of New York got serious about climate change, in the late teens, about 3-4 years ago, they passed Local Law 97, which sets a hard carbon emissions cap on each building type based on that type of building. It's essentially an emissions cap per square foot based on the usage. That cap goes live in 2025. And of most interest, if a building exceeds the cap in terms of the emissions that are allocated to it based on their electricity use and their on-site heating and cooling, the fine is $262 a ton or $243, I'm forgetting, but it's in the 240. One of them, Boston's 262 and New York's 243. Nobody knows where that number came from. I think it came from a research article about the cost of removing a ton of carbon. But that's a very steep fine. Most economists have been talking about $50 to $100 as the sort of social cost of carbon. So that's an aggressive fine. About 25% of the buildings in New York City will be facing that fine, 2 years from next week when we hit New Year's. So it's coming down the road and other cities have followed. And it means that there's a huge economic incentive to decarbonize. And of course, we can use those fines in calculating the savings for the projects that we do. So buildings will see a deeper retrofit as an economically sound decision, because they'll be facing those massive fines if they don't do the retrofit.
Yeah, 97. Or go ahead, Nathan.
No, I do want to add there that, you know, here at Renew, we are dedicated to staying up to date with the different local laws and, how we can best use those local laws to help our clients not only follow them, but understand them. And one of the things we're keeping a close eye on here is that there are updates, there are proposed updates to Local Law 97 coming into effect that are actually pretty exciting, because they are, the original law was built to, or was structured to talk about fines and emissions levels through 2035. And now they are talking about regulations on emissions through 2050. And they've I just did the math here. They had 6 different types of fuel coefficients, and now they have, I believe, 18, and from 10 different types of building categories to now 58. So the amount of buildings and businesses that this is going to be affecting should increase quite shortly. So it's just one of the things that we are always paying attention to around here, and definitely can commend states like New York and Boston for making those moves to try to meet aggressive emission standards.
Absolutely.
Yeah. One of the things that I, the 97 really is the teeth or the bat, or it's the stick, whatever you want to call it. But there's also the societal pressure law of Local Law 95, which is the letter grade law, which, just like you go to a restaurant and you see a letter D for health grade, you probably don't want to eat there. So they've started sticking these letters on buildings, on the front lobbies of buildings for energy codes. And it's definitely a problem. Like if you go to a luxury, hotel, and like they don't want to have a letter D sitting on in their, by their rotating door out front, because people might think it's for the restaurant. It's just a
exactly. Have you guys? I have now, when I'm down in New York for business and I see a grade below A, I'm tempted to go in and talk to somebody. I'm assuming that's a sort of an occupational hazard because I'm selling, right? But I do wonder how often, as you say, Mike, somebody walks into a hotel, if they've got even an inkling of climate interest. First of all, they may mistake it for the restaurant, which they definitely don't want. But I wonder if they get questions on it. It'd be interesting to find that out.
Yeah, I mean, it's in your face. I mean, I've definitely walked by and I always find it funny that you see all lead platinum, lead silver, and then you see a letter, C or B, and
right.
They do all this, public, we've done all these things, but we haven't actually looked at the performance of the building.
We could do some marketing around that, right? If a D means a rat in your restaurant, what does a D on carbon mean?
It means you're wasting money too. You know, you don't need to be using that many kilowatt hours, that many therms, whatever it might be. So when we're talking about, 97's basically verbatim been replicated here in Boston. I wouldn't mind if that 95 was replicated elsewhere, because I definitely think the people can get by. It's like some of these take a while to initiate, right? Like the law came out 2018. We aren't seeing penalties. Finally, we're going to start seeing actual penalties in 25. But the majority of the buildings, probably as you said, 80% of the buildings won't actually see penalties till 2030 when penalties ratchet down even more. And
yeah, my guess is that when we hit 25 and the first 25% pay fines, then people will start to pay attention and they'll realize essentially they're on the clock because they'll have to pay fines in 2030. So I think we're about to see real momentum around this in all cities, because Boston's, I think, also 25 and 2030. So.
Right.
So Charlie updates, T. Go ahead, Mike, Nate.
No, I was just going to say that those updates for 2030 and beyond really tightened up with these suggested changes here. So it's going to be, 2030 to 2034 should be even more aggressive than the original law.
Yeah, well, they'll capture that other 75% of the buildings, presumably.
Yeah.
And to meet all of these goals, you got to electrify everything. So that's pretty hard to do when you're in a city. And Charlie T., some of the projects that you worked on pre-joining Renew has been some battery storage projects, electrification projects, and getting those projects done in and around the city. How much, of a lift is it to get work done in the city versus, elsewhere? Because that's really one of the challenges that everybody says is, well, working in the city is really hard. There's many levels of regulation, and I see you smiling, so I assume there's something there.
Exactly. But I would say, so similar to the kind of the rating system being posted on the doors, right? We see these steps, incremental steps in how this is kind of grown on the forefront of everybody's mind. But I think not on the customer end, but on the regulatory end in New York, so they pass Local Law 97. But what I've seen is, there's a lot of hurdles. There's a lot of challenges to constructing these projects in the city that go along with the day-to-day logistics of construction. But on the regulatory side, we have seen some changes and kind of growth on how these projects are approved, reviewed, approved, inspected, signed off. And a level of familiarity between various organizations, FDNY, really being probably one of the main components. But battery systems.
That's the fire department.
The fire department controls their fire inspections on all new builds and construction, and the implementation of battery systems or generator systems. They all have to go through FDNY inspections, and there is a familiarity now with these systems and the units down to the almost a catalog of the models, where as these things pop up, they become more familiar with what they're looking at, what these things do, what they need to kind of trials and tribulations of what you need to watch out for in the commissioning process, and so I think a lot of the heavy lifting on getting city regulatory agencies up to speed is in process, and it's becoming much more manageable now. To kind of cross the line.
So that's a really interesting point, and this is why it's fun to. It's one of the many reasons it's fun to work at Renew, because we think about policy, because the policy affects where our customers will be interested. But we've got team members like Charlie T that are working on actually making these ideas happen, right? And what an interesting point. because the coverage at the high level from media will be, hey, there's this new ordinance and we're going to cut carbon in New York. But what does that really mean? That means you got to get customers who are willing to do it. That's where the where the penalties come in. And then you've got to get a whole host of agencies comfortable with new technologies and new ways of doing things. So Charlie T's referencing battery storage. There have been some concerns about lithium ion batteries and fire. That's one example. But we're at the forefront of the sustainability revolution in the urban setting. And that means we are educating regulatory agencies in cities all over the country so that we can crank out these projects quickly. But right now we're in that transition point where we're essentially all learning, but principally the agencies are learning what we're doing, why we're doing it, how to make it safe, because some of this technology is brand new. And that's just a really interesting insight to me, that part of what we sign up for when you take on the role of implementing these projects and funding them and leading a revolution is sort of getting the whole ecosystem up to speed.
Yeah, and Charlie, just to double down on that notion, so an example, I had a fuel cell, which is basically a natural gas-fed battery. If it's a chemical process, the byproducts being heat and electricity. A project in Jersey City, so neighboring New York, on the other side of the Hudson, and the approval process for the work permits to start that work, it was, you know, it was over a year. And it's no knock on Jersey City. They were very accommodating and happy to have you know, this technology as incorporated into their landscape. But they had a lot of questions, and so we kind of have to guide that process and answer those questions and get people familiar and get people comfortable. But on the other side of the coin, in New York, where we are doing this work, I just think the notion that, hey, the real estate is a commodity, it might be an understatement, but if we're implementing these systems here, you know, where the regulations are much more aggressive, you know, we have local law 97, so we're making these things happen. But if we can get these systems in these environments, you know, you can really start applying them anywhere, right? Where real estate is not at such a premium, you might not have to, you know, put this 30 stories up, you know, on a roof.
Right. And Charlie T, is taking the Jersey City example or any of the others. I mean, one of the things we have to do, Mike mentioned electrification. You're basically, in order to meet the goals of Local Law 97, you have to assume that the grid, the electricity grid, is going to a much lower carbon intensity format, meaning more offshore wind, more solar, more hydropower. That's the main bet people are making. And then you're saying, instead of burning natural gas or oil, we've done several projects in New York that transfer systems from oil to gas, which does reduce carbon significantly. And then the next frontier is to get them off gas and into something that's run by electricity, like a heat pump. But, you know, there aren't a lot of large heat pump installations in New York City yet. But let's either that example of the fuel cell. If it takes you a year to do the first one, presumably it takes you a lot less to do the next one. Is that right? And all the ones that follow?
Yeah, if it's a similar system, right, you kind of, so long as you take notes, right, we learn the process and then kind of figure out how to make it, you know, streamline your application process. When you know what they look for, and what they need, it really guides the whole process. And there are, you know, our channel partners that we use for implementation, very familiar with these processes and kind of designing around what's required. So it's still project by project, there is a learning curve depending on the use and what where it's going in, but yeah, once you do it once, you know what to look for on the next one.
Nice. It suggests the value of having a team, both on our side and for the partners we work with, because we get better at managing those kinds of hurdles.
So guys, I think it's time for us to transition into a review of green beer's history. So Charlie, I have a couple
questions. This is a big moment.
It is.
This is a big moment. We've never gone back and compared all our scores. Charlie T, by the way, thanks for joining us today. Great to hear. I think Charlie T is the first project engineer we've had on, and it's very cool to hear your perspective on what we do.
My pleasure. I appreciate coming in. And obviously, this is the episode to sit in on because I'm getting now the beer history, so I can get up to speed.
This is it. We've never gone back and tabulated our scores, so it's extremely exciting to figure out, you know, what the leaderboard looks like.
I did
Who's
a deep
the Tiger
dive.
Woods?
Yeah, right. I did a deep dive last week, so yeah, I learned a lot. I'm looking forward to sharing the results.
So before we talk about our top five beers, a few questions for Charlie. What was the first beer we reviewed?
Oh, man.
I will give you three options.
So green beers, episode number, are you going to give me, it's a multiple choice.
Okay. I'll give you three options. Yeah. Was it a Corona? Option A. The Trillium, option two, or option three. A Fat Tire.
I'm going to go Fat Tire.
He knows his green beer's history.
The Corona was a throwaway, but you, I think you know Trillium's my favorite beer, so there was I had to pause on that one.
Yeah, I thought we were going to get you. And then for anybody who's listened, I recommend go listen to our Clamagansett episode where we take clam base. You know what? You figure it out. It's a disgusting beer, but we did make a good beer where we...
Well, for those who were parachuting in on this episode, it's because a former colleague of ours, Austin Shiner, referenced the...
Bo Rita. Natty Bo with Old Bay on the rim.
Yes. And that came up because Natty Bo, which is a mid-Atlantic beer, was my first beer. And when right. We were off to the races at that point, then we decided we needed to figure out a New England regional version of the Bo Rita, and things went very wrong.
So they didn't go so good. Yeah. So we had the Clamagansett,
that's true.
The Narragansett lager. But then we also did a beer with maple and bacon for the rim. And what beer was the Northern New England based off of?
Oh, I know that one. It's the Long Trail Ale.
Oh, wow. He knows him too well.
That one's seared in my brain. That one's seared in my brain because I was trying to, first of all, we all agreed that anything tastes better with bacon, but I remember that one as the alternative to the Clamagansett.
The Clamagansett, the short version is very salty, very salty.
Yeah. Yeah.
I really did learn a lot about you both and the history of this podcast last week. So yeah, Clamagansett being one of the notable discoveries.
Yeah, maybe in 23 we'll try to create a New York City beer.
Like it.
That would
I like
I
it.
I don't know what we would do for the rim, but
well, that's not so. Next time Charlie T comes on, he gets to introduce us to the New York version of the Bo Rita.
I'm gonna guinea pig my friends on this, and they're gonna hate it. And I'm very
You're
excited
gonna
about
workshop it. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. There'll be stories there on the ones that didn't work.
Yeah.
So, Mike, here's a question: have you ever tried a Clamagansett since that fateful day?
No, that'd be disgusting.
I would have been surprised.
Imagine whipping those out at a party.
Short party.
You're gonna have one after the Goza. That's later on.
Right.
That's right.
Yeah.
See, I would rather have beer on one end with, you know, cherry stone clams on the side, you know, or like right. An oyster on top.
Yeah,
you
most
know,
people,
like that,
yeah.
Something like that.
That's how it should be done.
fair point. Fair point. Keep them apart, people.
There we go. There we go.
All righty. Nathan, do you want to work us up five through one?
All right. So yeah, I can do that. I guess Charlie, we'll give you a guess of what beers, if you could give a couple beers you think are in the top five.
Well, you know, one of the things about our scoring system that's fascinating is how far apart Mike and I are. Like, I don't know if you have the breakdowns on the top five.
I do. Yeah,
I'd like to hear. I'll say two of the top five would be Trillium and Sierra Nevada.
All right. You're in the ballpark. Absolutely. So for number five, we've got Mystic Valley Brewing Mystic Brewing out of Chelsea, Massachusetts.
Wow.
You were drinking.
I believe they shut down.
Oh, yeah. No. Well, they're number five on our list, so they definitely made an impression.
Yep.
And then number four is Trillium out of Boston, Massachusetts.
And Charlie, you gave this a 9. I did not, I don't have a rank on a Trillium. For whatever reason, I must not have had a Trillium that day.
That's true. It's based off of Charlie and Austin were the raiders for the Trillium. So maybe we'll have to revisit.
Mystic Brewery closed just before the pandemic. Yeah.
Yeah. So Mystic Brewery, Trillium. Number three is Urban Chestnut Brewing Company out of St. Louis, Missouri.
Yes, my oldest daughter went to WashU in St. Louis. She and I went to the brewery and had a beer, I think after we did a race out there together, and I brought some back. And they have a pretty good sustainability score, but it's a very good tap room.
Yeah, their American Pale Ale definitely was a hit on the Green Beers podcast. And then we have number two, which is Sierra Nevada.
Nice.
Sierra Nevada. So that's out of Chico, California. Charlie, you knew that one was coming.
Yeah, I do just want to interject quickly here. On the Urban Chestnut, that was our end of 2019 review. We made a lot of projections about 2020. They were all horribly wrong.
All wrong. Yeah. I'm sure we were alone in that, but yes.
Right. I did get a kick out of it. You know, I did make a note. The Green Beers team makes predictions about 2020.
Very optimistic. So. This is our year.
Oh, exactly. That's awesome.
And we have our number one beer, which is, any guesses?
Drum roll, please.
Maine Beer Company.
Nice.
So that's
those are good beers. That's a strong 100%. List, people.
100%.
And look at that. Kind of cool for beer lovers out there. I mean, sad for Mystic, but we got one that's so niche it closed down. And another one that's, you know, I think it's going strong in St. Louis, but you got to go to St. Louis to get it. So
there you go.
So
there you go.
The question is, where does the Holy Gose rank?
All right. Lead out, Mike, with your score.
I'll give it a 7 on both.
Okay.
Crushability and on, and on, if we're going the old fashioned, I think it's a 7 as well, but very easy to drink.
So this, the first 7, just to be clear, is the Mike Savage ranking, which is unique to Mike Savage. How would I sit down and drink a lot of these?
Yeah.
Right?
And maybe it could be higher. I mean, like, they're only 4.2. I feel great. I don't even feel bad right now. I have one down. I think 7 is definitely probably the highest on the crushability. And it's a wonderful, maybe I'll get some weird aftertaste eventually, but we're good right now.
Is the 7 including sustainability, like the sustainability point?
Yeah, we'll give them an 8.5 with sustainability. I think they get the full 1.5.
All right. Wonderful.
Nice.
Wonderful.
So I'm not a Gose drinker per se, But I really like this. It's sour, but it's not too sour. It's been very tasty, and it gets the full 1.5 points for sustainability for me. I'm going to give it a 9, a 7.5, and the 1.5 adder.
Very good. All right. I'm torn here. I really do like this. I have the blood orange. It's slightly different from everybody else here on the pod, but I really do enjoy this beer. I could certainly drink a number of them. Let's say I'll go with like 5 or 6 on my crushability rating, but I want to give them. I'm just fluctuating between a 7.5 or an 8, and then their sustainability. You know, I'm thinking I'm going to give them a 9.25. Is what I'm
nice.
Gonna give them. All right, nice. 9.25.
Yeah, that's good.
Just to change it a little bit, but like I could pretty easily drink this beer at any time. Very tasty.
Yeah.
I recommend trying the blood orange if you ever see it. And 5 or 6 on crushability. So that's me.
Yeah, okay. This is my first beer rating. So let's see. I have no Gozo experience to compare this to, but it is very tasty. It's not overly sour. It cuts the dust. That's what my dad would say. So
I'm assuming that's the highest form of praise for a beer.
I think so. Yeah. I think awesome. He comes from Westerns, right? Watching Westerns as a kid. But anyways, great beer. Would drink many. Anderson Valley, really like what they're doing, especially they're located in California. They net export their solar generation. They have solar-powered wells for their water recovery. So I'm doing a lot of good work. I don't know if the 1.5 is a uniform maximum rating for the point adder, but
yeah, there's the range is 0 to 1.5 for.
Oh yeah, they're a 1.5.
Yeah.
So just to confuse everybody, Charlie, I'm also going to rate this at 9.0.
Nice.
Wonderful.
Nice. That's a strong score. That would put them conceivably in the top 5. Are you doing this live, Nathan?
I am doing this live right now. So that's an average of 8.93. Which is actually going to tie. Yeah, that ties Mystic Valley Brewing or Mystic Brewing, excuse me, at a 5th place.
Wow. So awesome. All right. I love this new format. Nathan will run the numbers every week, people, and we can update our top 5. Yeah.
Yep.
All right. That feels right to me.
Yeah. No, I'm very happy with this beer. I did try it a little early because I've enjoyed it. And now that I've got all the information, we'll just keep this list running.
Yeah, absolutely. Feels right to me that they you know, kind of snuck into the top 5.
There you go.
Well then, till on the winter solstice here, we will, as it's getting darker and darker in our backgrounds, we will call it a do. And till next time, it's been great. It's been Green Beers.
It's been Green Beers, and notice we're not making any predictions for 2023.
No.
Smart. Special guest, Charlie T. Thank you again.
Thank you, guys. My pleasure.
Green Beers is brought to you by Renew Energy Partners, your partner in building decarbonization. Decarbonizing your building is good for the earth, and it's a smart business move, but it's complicated, and it can cost you a lot of money. Our goal is to decarbonize your building while saving you money, so all of those retrofits pay for themselves. Learn more at renewep.com.